This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today we're going to be looking at the post-University of Florida, Florida State game fallout. And first and foremost, this is FSU football in 2014. They simply cannot put teams away. But they keep things close. They keep it interesting, and then they go out and they win. It's just the identity of this team. If I were Jimbo Fisher and the coaching staff, I would have been really upset not to have put this game away at the end of the first half, when it really should have been put away. But I'd also kind of be chuckling to myself ruefully that this is just the identity of the team. They seem to play with their food. They just cannot finish. They cannot put teams away until the absolute last minute. This was a game where, you know, basically Florida State started as they have, actually worse than they have at any point this year, I think. With four turnovers from Winston, three in the first quarter, three first quarter interceptions. First one was really not on him. First one was on Mario Pender for not finishing the slant route. On a slant route, on that kind of backside slant, the outside receiver has to get across the face of the defensive back. You cannot let the defensive back cross your face, and Pender did. So that's really on Pender more than it is Winston. I mean, Winston could have put the ball into his body a little bit more, but that's about it. You basically credit Pender for that. That's one that should never be intercepted, really. The other two were just bad decisions. Throwing that post route. It's the kind of throw that Winston will make sometimes with anticipation that his guy's going to get there. As I recall, that was for Bobo Wilson, and he got held up just a little bit, didn't get there, and the backside safety made a great play. You've got to basically, actually, I guess that was a front side safety, just coming back into the play, made a great play, great catch. But you can't make that throw. You can't take that shot, especially at that point in the game and against a team like Florida that has that kind of secondary. But again, it's what you get when you have a quarterback who anticipates the way that Jameis Winston does. But the third one, he really should have just thrown to the underneath or thrown it out of bounds. There just wasn't much there, but either way, three interceptions, and Florida State comes out of that with a 9-7 deficit. They should have been down 17, 21 points at least at that point. 17 probably is about right. Anywhere between 13 and 17 would have been the norm to expect, given the field position that they gave up. But instead, the defense won this game for Florida State, especially at that point in the first quarter, where you know they were put up against their backs were against the wall early, and they gave up 9 points and scored a touchdown of their own. This is, you know, anyone who wants to really rip into this defense or criticize Charles Kelly, the defensive coordinator, for being subpar, has not watched the development of this defense as this year has gone on, and has not obviously not noticed the improvement. I mean, this defense the last few weeks has really been the reason that this team has won the games that they've won. Whereas early in the year, there was, you know, this young defense was a liability at certain points. It was not a cause to lose games, but it was certainly not helping them win it as much as they needed to. They were good in the red zone. They were good situationally, but they weren't able to do some of the things that you would hope that hope for from a Florida State defense. So the last few weeks, that's not been the case. The last few weeks, this defense has really stepped up and has won games where the offense has not played as well. And you think about that, Winston's. Florida State under Winston had not scored under 30 points until the last 3 weeks, and the last 3 weeks have been the lowest point outputs of any Florida State offenses under Winston. The last three games have been his lowest outputs. So you know, the defense has stepped forward and won those games. And, you know, you want to talk about, well, you know, if Jeremy Pruitt were here, he would have had a better season. I'm not so sure about that. I mean, you think about that. Florida State allowed 314 fewer rushing yards to Florida than Pruitt's Georgia defense. Let me say that again. 314 fewer rushing yards to Florida than Pruitt and his UGA defense did. That's insane. And the same thing was true with Florida State against Clemson. Florida State played Clemson with Deshaun Watson and actually had at least equal a defensive performance versus what Georgia gave up against Clemson. And they were not playing the same offense. I mean, anybody who has watched Clemson at all this year and seen what a difference it is with Deshaun Watson at quarterback and Cole Stout at quarterback. You know, Cole Stout coming the way that it was this week against South Carolina. First drive, Watson is in the ball game, and Clemson goes down the field and they drive about 60 yards in the first three plays. And then he, you know, comes up hobbling a little bit on one of the throws. I mean, the kid's playing with a partially torn ACL. Comes up hobbling on one of those throws, and Cole Stout goes goes into the game. You know, they had him ready just in case that would happen. And it was just like a turd in the punch bowl. I mean, they go from three plays for 60 yards to suddenly going three and out. I mean, it was just completely different, and very nearly throwing an interception. And Watson and Stout did later throw a key interception in that game and put them in a bad spot. But it didn't matter because Watson played enough of that game that Clemson was able to win comfortably. Well, Florida State played that Clemson offense with Watson. And frankly, that Clemson team with Watson, I think, is a top 10 team. I think they're a marginal top 25 team with Stout at quarterback. And Florida State's defense did what they needed to do. Now, that was, of course, the last game with Niall Lawrence-Stample, and Florida State took a major step back losing him. And I think we're just now starting to see FSU recover a little bit from that. Derek Nnadi looked good against Florida in the times that he was on the field. You know, you're starting to see a little bit more rotation at those tackle positions and more consistency from the defensive line and linebackers, and that's making a big difference. And you think about this: Florida State gave up 3.42 yards per carry to Florida. Now, you know, that's pretty good. Florida's been able to run the football pretty well in the last month of the season, last 5-6 weeks of the season, and you think about that. Alabama gave up 3.96 to Florida, 3.96 yards per carry to Florida. That's a half yard more per carry than what Florida State allowed. I found that interesting because, you know, you would think that Alabama actually has the better defense at this point. I'm not actually sure about that now that Florida State's defense is starting to hit its stride a little bit. That stuck out to me, that they gave up 3.42 yards per carry versus Alabama giving up just under 4 yards per carry. This Florida State defense is now playing at a playoff level. And honestly, this game should have been over at the half because of it. Once it was 9-6 and the momentum had changed because of that pick six that Terrence Smith had, where you got to see some of the physicality of the Florida State secondary, actually, with Jalen Ramsey headhunting and Ronald Darby flashing the speed that's one of the reasons that pro scouts are so high on him. They, you know, it's 9-7. They got to stop. Florida State scored on the next two drives to go up 21-9. And Florida was fragile. They were on the ropes at that point. All you needed was one more score to go up three possessions, and that game was over. Florida was starting to look at each other. They were pointing fingers. You could see their heads starting to hang. That game was over if they're able to score another touchdown before Florida's able to do anything to change that momentum. That game was out of control. Florida State had the chance to win that game big. And then they get lined up wrong. They don't slide the protection properly on the punt. And they give up what ostensibly a block punt. It counted as a fumble, but that's, you know, a fourth first half turnover and a fifth turnover overall in the game. And then the next play, you get, you know, isolated in a bad matchup with Mario Edwards on a tight end, and you give up a score. And that was the one call, I think, in this game that I could really complain about in terms of the defensive staff, in terms of what Charles Kelly and those guys asked this defense to do. Overall, I had very little to complain about. That's one. And they did that last year. They did it the year before. You know, they've always dropped their ends to do some of that stuff. But in that situation, I didn't like the idea that you could get, that Florida could use the formation to get a wheel route against the defensive end, which, you know, Clemson was able to do earlier in the year. And, you know, there've been a couple situations where, you know, Florida State's had some wheel routes tried on their effectively their defensive ends. I mean, they're treating them as outside linebacker defensive end hybrids. And they're calling them off outside linebackers most of the time. But you know, that's not a matchup that I'm comfortable with as a coordinator. If I'm in that situation, you know, obviously Miami had a big play, not on a wheel route, but on a seam route against a similar matchup. You just can't let them have that, particularly in that situation. But either way, you go from 21 to 9 with a team that is absolutely on the ropes and is fragile and ready to go down. And then you give up a punt block and an immediate touchdown going into the half, and now all of a sudden it's 21-16, and the game is completely different from that point. The momentum had shifted back, and now, you know, you're in a rivalry game dogfight, and that's the frustrating thing. I think if you're a Florida State fan, or if you're on the Florida State coaching staff, or even if you're a player, that you realize how close you've been to blowing teams out all year. I mean, you look at the first game of the season. Was that? You got a chance to go up 24-0 against Oklahoma State, and instead you throw an interception, you allow them to score, and keep them within a score or two, and the game becomes something very different, where you're not in danger necessarily, but you never actually put the team away. And that's just been the way that they've played all season. But at any rate, Florida State has now played 5 top 15 defenses in F+, if I'm reading this correctly, which tells you the caliber of defenses that they've played on the year. They've played 6 top 30 defenses. They've played as good a defensive schedule as anybody in the country, and they've managed to survive against it. You could see, I think, that the offense is not quite where they want to be in terms of execution. I felt like Winston, you know, obviously Winston played the worst game of his career against Florida in this game. But this was, I think this was a place where his mind was not necessarily where it has been. I think he was more distracted in this game. And the last time that I saw him look anything like this was against Duke last year, when, again, it was a very similar situation where all of the sexual assault allegations were finally coming to a head, and the decision was made by the state attorney's office late in the week. And he did not look as focused or as prepared against Duke as he had the rest of that year. Now against Duke, it's Duke. You know, Duke's a good football team, but they don't have the talent in the secondary that Florida does. They don't have the talent to pressure the Florida State offense the way that Florida does. So even though he was uneven, he made some dangerous throws, didn't play all that well against Duke last year, he also had Kelvin Benjamin and a major talent edge around him against Duke, and it didn't really matter that much. But this week, that was not the case. And he didn't have a Kelvin Benjamin who could just go out and win any one-on-one matchup if guys are going to press him and put their hands on him. He didn't have that. And so, you know, you wind up with a different kind of situation where he has to be, in this game, he would have had to be as precise and as good as he's been at any point in the year, because their secondary, as far as their corners at least, are as good as anybody that Florida State's played this year. And he wasn't. He was not as focused. He didn't look as prepared as usual. And you could see the results. The good thing for Florida State is that since Cam Irving has moved to center, the running game has completely changed. And you could see in that second half, really, as it became obvious that Winston was not really himself, you could see that Jimbo Fisher went away from the passing game as much. And actually, I think if he made some mistakes in the third and fourth quarter, late third and early fourth quarter when Florida State was starting to run the football very well against that Florida front, there were some times where he should have stuck with it more. He should have been able to rely on Dalvin Cook in particular, and then Mario Pender, who Pender has I think he's actually the more natural back. He's a more natural back than Dalvin Cook, but he at this point isn't pressing his runs as much as Cook. Cook is actually running with more authority and confidence and stand behind his pads and not trying to dance a little bit. And that's what you're seeing from Pender right now, is that he's seeing the hole and he's trying to cut back, but he's not doing it while keeping his weight forward. And so you're seeing him get tripped up a little bit, where Cook is actually hitting that, moving forward, keeping his angles and getting up the field. I think that's a fairly easy fix for Pender as he gets back into it. I think we'll probably see some of that this week. But basically, you know, they could have ridden Cook a little bit more in that late third, early fourth quarter, and they actually did throw a couple times where I thought that they could have stuck with the running game a little bit more and just kept pounding, particularly on the third and two call that preceded the egregiously bad fake punt call on fourth and 10. Both of those calls I thought could have been significantly better. There's no reason not to just run Cook on third and two with the way that they were getting pushed on the offensive line. And with the way that Cook was running, they should have gotten that and had no difficulty punching that in. But they didn't. They tried a little drag route. The idea was to get either the drag route coming across and the receiver got held a little bit, so that wasn't there. And then, you know, maybe the other option was Bobo Wilson on a dig route across, and they couldn't get him the ball. There was a little pressure and Winston didn't really see him. So, you know, that is basically that's where I think Florida State could have stuck. I thought Jimbo Fisher could have stuck with the running game a little bit more there, which is not really, even though some fans seem to have an impression that that's a tendency of his, he tends to be pretty consistent in terms of sticking with the run. I saw some complaints about a bubble screen at one point. That's an automatic call. That's a read by Winston on a run play. That's automatically tagged in there. If they have numbers, you toss it out there to do that. That's not a problem. That's not like, it was not a pass call. That was a run call, and that's the way it works. But at any rate, Florida State was able to run the football in this game and win even when Winston wasn't at his best. And that's something, you know, a lot of people were saying in the last few weeks that this team is Winston with an average surrounding cast. You know, Trevor Maddich on ESPN, although I thought he was having trouble keeping a straight face at certain points, was talking about how FSU is Winston playing at his best. And, you know, basically it's a one-trick pony with Winston and Rashad Green. It's a good trick, but, you know, they're pretty average around it. Well, that's not the case. You know, when you look at the results of this game, I don't know how anybody could have made that claim anyway with the outcome of the Clemson game without Winston. But in this game, again, you have Winston playing very poorly and Florida State wins with five turnovers. That doesn't happen. You don't beat your rival with five turnovers. But when you are running the football extremely well, and Florida State averaged the same yards per carry, 4.11, as UGA did against UF. And that's more than Alabama averaged, and that's including sack yardage and all that. You know, Dalvin Cook averaged 6 yards a carry against Florida. Carlos Williams averaged 6.3 before he went out with a concussion. So Florida State was able to run the football with a lot of success. And this, you know, this team is pretty significantly different now that they're able to run the football like that, because that gives them some insulation for when Winston is not exactly at his best. And, you know, I think there should be some concern given the way that this week you have the hearing, you have the code of conduct hearing. There should be some concern that Winston may not be as focused this week, that, you know, obviously this stuff is going to weigh on you. It's very difficult to maintain a high level of play. It's very difficult to be focused and practice well and to, you know, do all of the things that you need to do to prepare well during the week and be focused come game time when all of this stuff is going on. And, you know, he's been incredible. And this Florida State team has been incredible for how well that they have compartmentalized, how well they have eliminated clutter, to use the favorites, one of the favorite sayings of Jimbo Fisher. They've done an incredible job with that. But once you actually get in the middle of this, and he's had to prepare his own defense effectively for this code of conduct hearing, it gets really, really difficult. It's another level, and you know, that's just, you're not going to expect the same level of performance from someone who's going through that you would otherwise. So, you know, that's something to look for this week. I mean, I don't know how much, if any, practice he's going to miss as a result of this hearing, but that's something that coming into the Georgia Tech game has to be a concern. And you have to be, if you're Florida State, you have to think that you need to make sure that you run the football well against Georgia Tech to win that game. Because you can't count on Winston to be on his at his peak, given what's going on, given the circus going on off the field. I don't think there's a whole lot of concern that Winston will lose this case, that he will be found in violation of what he's charged with, or what he actually isn't charged with, but what the accusation that is being examined in the hearing is with regard to these potential code of conduct violations. I don't think there's a whole lot of concern that he would be found to be in breach of that, but it's still a lot of pressure and a lot of emotional and mental pressure to go through this sort of thing. And so to expect him to be at his absolute best on Saturday, I think is a little much. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next podcast, but a couple other things before we finish. This is, it's worth noting how difficult it is to finish unbeaten in a regular season. To finish unbeaten at all is so difficult. I don't care who's on your schedule. Ask Marshall. Marshall has an exceptionally easy schedule this year. They were starting to complain that they weren't getting their due for going undefeated, and they finally lost in their last game. It's really, really difficult to go undefeated, even against a bad schedule. Ask Boise State from a few years ago, playing very soft schedules, and they couldn't go undefeated. It's so hard to go undefeated, especially once you have a bullseye on your back. Florida State has not played an easy schedule. Regardless of what anybody out there may say, they have not played an easy schedule. They've played only one non-Power 5 opponent in their regular season schedule, the Citadel. They managed to win every other game, and all of those teams are coming in, obviously giving them their best shot, and that makes it that much harder. It's hard to go undefeated once. It's almost impossible to do it twice in a row. Because when you win, when they won last year, they, you know, obviously they're Florida State. Most of the time they're going to get the team's best shot as it is. It's that much more the case after you've won a title. When you are really the hunted, one of the other things that changes is, you know, obviously teams prepare more for you. That was true, I think, most of the time in the conference anyway. That Florida State was going to get the best shot on team schedule. But teams are taking, you know, multiple weeks in their off season and in their spring and in their preseason practice, and they're carving that time out to specifically work on things that will prepare them to handle what they'll see against Florida State and to put new wrinkles in so that they can have that ready for the potential upset. That part's there. And, you know, you're going to have to deal with that from teams. The other part, though, that makes it so much harder is that you're playing against yourself. When you go undefeated the first time, you're riding the crest. You're riding the wave. I mean, it's great. You are the world is your oyster. I mean, you are really enjoying the prospect of finishing perfect. And you can ride the momentum. But then after you've finished, you've reached the peak. Then you realize you have to do it again. You're preparing all off season, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to maintain. You're trying to play against yourself. You're trying to repeat the same level. It's much, much harder. Think about it this way. If for those of you out there who are golfers, you know what it's like if you play golf well at all at any point. You know what it's like to hit a few really good shots in a row. You hit them flush. You're hitting it close. You finally feel what it's like to actually hit good golf shots. And then what happens? What happens for most of us, and until you start to get really, really good, and even then it happens a little bit. But what tends to happen is you hit, you know, five or six really good drives down the middle, and then you're trying to repeat. It's like, okay, well, I just need to do what I did the last time. Just need to do what I did the last time. And then what happens is all of a sudden you overthink it, and bam, you're in the weeds, or you're in the woods. That's the way that this works. You start to play against yourself. You start to go, oh, you know, I just need to do the same thing I did before. Instead of that focus on the next thing and being able to maintain doing exactly what you did before, once you start to worry about doing what you did before and trying to match that, it gets that much harder. And so you're playing against perfection. And that's how this team is played. And I think you can see that a little bit. And the pressure, the level of pressure to maintain that excellence when you're taking everyone's best shot week in and week out, and you're still managing to survive, there's that additional pressure to try to live up to that. And it is exhausting. There's an old truism. I mean, Woody Hayes and some of these old coaches have said that you can really only get a team up, you know, really up to play a game, you know, two, maybe three times in a given year. And that's part of what makes it so difficult to go undefeated. You can't play up that many times. Well, Florida State is playing every team that they play is playing up that way. And so they have to match that level and exceed it in order to win each time. And it's exhausting. You can see this team is exhausted. And that's the concern, I think, going into Georgia Tech, is this team is exhausted. After the last month in particular, Virginia, Miami, Boston College, and Florida, four very physical teams, I think Florida State's exhausted. And you can see it. It's a very tired football team, mentally and every other way. It's a tired football team. And it's because they're taking that best shot, and then they're surviving, and they're moving on, and they're trying then to repeat that. And again, they're getting everybody else's best shot. So you move on from Virginia, giving them, you know, unloading and punching and giving body blows with everything they have, and you survive it, and you can barely get your breath, and then all of a sudden you have Miami at Miami, and you barely survive that game late, and then you have Boston College, a good Boston College team. You survive that one late, and then you have Florida, your biggest rival. It's really, really difficult to do. It's very hard to go undefeated, and this team has done it now twice, two regular seasons in a row. That's unheard of at Florida. It's never happened before at Florida State. The other thing to think about, let's look at the results of Florida State's opponents before they play Florida State and after. David Hale from ESPN posted this up not too long ago, and it was very interesting because I've said all year, you can see the difference between Florida State opponents before them and up into that Florida State game, and they give everything they have. They unload everything. They swing with everything they've got, and then they lose, and then they're ruined. I mean, Florida State has just ruined teams. They don't get the win, and then they've got nothing left for the next few weeks. Florida State's opponents are 34-24 coming into the game against Florida State. That's a 586 winning percentage. That's pretty good. They're 16. Those same teams are 16-26, 381 afterwards. 16-26 afterwards. Now that actually is leaving out Clemson, who's the anomaly here. Clemson actually has been pretty good on both sides. And again, that's a better Clemson team than everybody else, I think. And, you know, they've got more horses on that defense to be consistent. But 34-24, this is non Clemson opponents. 34-24 before Florida State, 16-26 after. That's a huge difference. Teams are unloading everything they have against Florida State. And then when they lose, they're ruined. They have nothing left. Look at what's happened to Miami since that game. I mean, Virginia blew them out. Then Pittsburgh beat them. Miami is a shell of what they were when they came into Florida State and what they were in that Florida State game. They have nothing left. Emotionally, any other way, Florida State ruined that team. And Florida State then keeps moving. They keep winning. They win the next game. So all these other teams are wasting that much emotional energy. They're putting that much into that game, and then they can't sustain it the next week. FSU has been able to sustain that 28 times in a row. That, to me, is absolutely incredible. The next most impressive thing for me is that Florida State's -4 turnover margin on the year. That's 94th in the country. Normally, elite teams are heavily in the plus side there. I mean, last year, Florida State was plus 17, if I remember right. It should have been, it was somewhere around second or third nationally. This year, they're minus four, and they're still undefeated. They've still been good enough in other phases to finish ahead, to actually win those games. That, to me, I mean, that if somebody wants to say Florida State's not a dominant team, well, they haven't dominated on the scoreboard, but they've been dominant enough to win despite shooting themselves in the foot, despite being emotionally exhausted, despite all the clutter on the field. That is a dominant team in many ways when you have the ability to win despite all of these other things. When you're turning it over five times and you still win, you're a dominant team. And the other team that's frightening that way is actually Alabama. Alabama's minus two as well. Florida State's minus four, so they've been even worse. But Alabama's won despite some bad turnover margins over the course of the year. And I ultimately think that those teams are on collision course. I think that's going to be the national title game, and boy, it's going to be a war. We'll see, however, whether Florida State can get past a very good Boston College team this weekend. We'll talk about that in the next episode. For the rest of the Noll Digest crew, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us good ratings. Tell a friend. Thanks a lot. I made this.